My name's Serge. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
a proud member of the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
So it's an honor to be up here at this retreat. Steve, thanks for asking me to speak. When Steve called me a few weeks ago and asked me to speak, you know, I don't speak a lot. I used to enjoy it early on, and I don't enjoy it as much. So, you know, I go up to when I'm pushed usually. So when Steve called, I was like, man, I was like, you can't find anybody else, you know? And he said, wow, you know, I had this and that. And I was like, and I was right in the middle of work, and I had like 10 things going on. I was like, all right, man. I was like, were you at the last time I spoke? Were you there, man? I was like, are you sure you want me to speak? And he's like, yeah, man, you got it. You can do this. I was like, all right. So he sent out the topics. And the topic that he sent out for me was, you know, overcoming fear and control. And so I was in fear and control, just like I am now. And have been really for my entire life. And so anyway, we get to so as I'm walking through the fear, I'm like, all right. So I immediately go into control and I'm like, all right, who are the other speakers? I'm like, Steve, send me their names. I'm going to send a text out. I know the last time we did something like this, I heard John put the team together and they all spoke and they came up with a theme. So I'm like, all right, well, that came out pretty good. So let's do that. Call everybody up and I said, we're going to speak this Friday. And we talked and it went well. I met some of the guys on Zoom and I asked Steve, I said, Steve, you know, so I'm starting to feel pretty good about this thing now. I'm feeling a little bit confident, you know, and I'm like, all right, you know. Maybe I know about this thing, you know. Maybe I'm feeling pretty good. So I said, Steve, so why'd you ask me to, you know, speak on fear and control? I'm thinking he's going to, all your successes and, you know, how you've persevered through everything. And he says, well, you're a control freak. So I figured this would be a great topic for you. So I go immediately back into fear, you know, and that's kind of where I, you know, where I live. And I've lived for a better part of my life. I can't tell you how great this has been, even though I'm in total fear. Because it's really, you know, somebody mentioned this earlier, it's really given me an opportunity to reflect. And I've been so busy with work and stuff, which is kind of what I do, it's what I can control in some ways, that I had a chance to reflect. And then the fear continued to grow coming into the weekend. You know, and I prayed. I prayed before coming in here. I prayed this morning. And I've just been filled with so much emotion this weekend. And I think it's because, and I got, you know, 21 years yesterday. And I've just been reflecting on everything. And I've been trying to connect with God and letting go of any fear. Because whether I'm a good speaker or not, this is all I have. This is what I know. It's my story. And it's all I got, right? And so what happened today, you know, God came down and he's been with me all day. And so I took notes, and Stevie B knows I take great notes. There's a story there. And all day long, he started last night. Everybody I spoke to, the messages that I heard in the small groups, I'm in my head and I'm thinking about the story and it seemed like every conversation that I've had, God was talking to me through that person. And I was like, shit, I gotta change my story. Every conversation, I'm like, shit, I gotta change my, I'm gonna go back and change my story. And I'm like taking notes now, and then it happened again. And then the next speaker would come in and I'm like, yeah, like that's what happened in my life, you know. And then we went to the small group and it happened again. And I'm trying to take notes of everything and trying to keep it in my head and trying to organize it. And it helped me get to a place of like, God's here with you. You know? And the topic of fear and control and acceptance, God was like, I got you. I'm right here. And little by little, the fear control dissipated a little bit. And I realized my whole life has been fear. So I don't have to make anything up. I don't have to sound any certain way, be some miraculous speaker. Like, my whole life was fear. And this program has helped me to get out of that at some level and continue. I continue to work on that every day. You know, when I think about when fear started for me, my first memory goes back to when I was, I think, about six. And it's this memory when I was in first grade and I was fighting these five kids. And I don't remember how we got there, but I remember I was fighting these kids. And every time somebody says, you know, think about your childhood, or we talk about childhood, that's the memory that comes up, you know? And I've been fighting ever since. And that's all I know. I know how to fight. And that was my way to control the situation so I didn't get hurt. In whatever situation it was, work, family, wife, children, friendships, self-sabotaging. If I sabotage those friendships, girlfriends, friendships, if I keep showing up and you start getting to know me and I don't show up anymore, then I can't get hurt. You're not going to get to know me and push me aside, you know? But that's the memory that comes up for me, you know? Think about this for a second. Everybody for a second, just close your eyes. I want you to think about a time when you were 6 years old. Take a moment and think about a time when you were 6 years old. Look at yourself. Look at what you're wearing. Shirt, pants, your shoes. What you look like. Picture it in your mind. Now, if you had the chance to go back right now and talk to that six-year-old kid, what would you say to him? What would you say to that six-year-old kid who was in total fear of life and had no clue, but only knew fear? I would tell him, I wish I was there with him through the whole ride. When he was alone, and I could be there with him throughout the whole career of using and up to now. I wish I always had that person next to me telling me it's going to be okay. You know? My whole life before that, you know, my whole life consisted of the fear, and up to the time I was using, I didn't care about anything. All I remember, like school, all I remember was that I cared what you thought of me. I don't remember listening to shit in school because I was so anxious about what you thought of me. That was my only goal. And if you tried me, we were fighting. I was suspended all the time. I fought everybody in my grammar school. Some of them twice, three times. There's one guy, Billy Murray, I fought six times. Right? And my mother was at the school all the time. But that was something that I was good at. And it was something that kept me from, you know, it gave me the illusion of control. And then I was also a class clown. You know? All the way up into high school. Because people laughed and we joked and you accepted me, or I felt accepted in those times. And that was all I did. That was all I did. I don't remember studying for shit. And if I did, it was just to show the smart kid that I could get an A. And then I go right back to the same stuff. You know? And then, you know, at like 13, 14, you know, I started to drink. I started to use. And for the first time, I felt relief. For the first time, I didn't have to worry about what anybody thought of me. It was great. And I didn't have to care about or explain why something happened, because it didn't matter, because we were drunk. We were messed up. It was cool. It was okay. I didn't have to explain anything. And if I did, all I had to do was blame it on being drunk. And it was great. It was great. You know? And then through my addiction, I still wanted to control some things. But I was slowly starting to lose control. I used from the time I was 13, 14, till I was 30. You know? And I remember my father used to say to me, you know, I moved down to Florida when I was 21. I owed people money. I was gambling, addiction. And I figured if I moved to Florida, you know, there's no drugs down here. That's not necessarily true. And I found out that nothing closes. You know, where I'm from, bars close at 1, liquor stores are closed on Sunday. I was like, this is great, you know? But through that time, my parents ended up moving down here, and you know, my father started to say to me, he'd be like, when are you going to get your life together? 21 years old. You know, and I'd say, Pop, I'm only 21. I'm like, I got plenty of time. And then I said, I'm only 22. I'm only 23. I'm only 24. I'm only 25. So I'm around like 25, 26. Like, I'm like, all right, you know, I see my friends from, you know, high school and stuff. They're starting to kind of, you know, graduate from college, and some are getting married, and I think social media started to come out a little bit, and my life's a mess. I couldn't keep anything. Lost my train of thought, but I'm watching all my friends and their lives, and so now I'm trying to control the drinking. Now I'm trying to control my life a little bit, you know? And I remember there was this one time towards, you know, maybe a year or so before I got sober. I don't know what happened. I think I totaled my father's car. He went away, left his car with me. I totaled my car and I totaled his car while he was away. And he was driving back from it, and we were arguing about something, and I'm trying to prove my point to him. You know, because that was always the discussion, because I only lived from my parents. Like, anything I had, the money, they were always kind of there to kind of rescue. You know, and I'm arguing with them a point of why I'm right, which was a common occurrence, you know, right after I just totaled this car. And I don't know what was said or what I said, but he said to me, he says, you know something, for somebody who loves to be in control, I've never seen anybody so out of control. And it stopped me, because in that moment I was trying to show that I know what I'm talking about, and I didn't know anything. And it stumped me because it was so true. Like, I had no control over anything, and now I'm like 27, 28, and now I'm really trying. Now the hopelessness is really coming in, and now I'm really scared, because for all my using, I was scared. I didn't have to be. Because if I was, all I had to do was take something or drink something, and I wasn't scared anymore, as long as I did it again the next day. You know? That was for me, that was kind of the beginning. For me. I hit a rock bottom. And I knew that my life wasn't working. And thank God my father was there for me. They had cut me off. They wouldn't help me with anything. So I had no control of everything. You know. Well, right before that, actually. Let me back up for a second. Right before that, I got in a situation. I was talking to the guys about it earlier, where I was getting these pills. It was one of the last car accidents I got in when I was 29. I fractured my sternum. And this one scared the crap out of me. I really felt like I couldn't move for like 2 months. I really felt like I was this close to being paralyzed. I had to roll off the bed to get in, you know, get into the bathroom. But right before that, I had, oh no, right after that, I got these pills, and I had a little job after that, because I was kind of trying to clean myself up. I was on the up, you know, because life was like this. I total a car, and then I go stay at my parents, get a little job, get a little girl, and then drop it off. That was the story of my life. But because of these pills, because of this, I was, you know, I had a copay and I was making a lot of money. So it seemed like I was doing the best of my life, or I felt like I was doing the best of my life. I was making money. I had plenty of supply, so I wasn't using all my supply. I had acquired an apartment that my dad paid for. I got an apartment. I had a car. I had a girlfriend. And this was the best that I had been doing since the time I started using and kind of was on my own. And once I acquired those, it was the scariest moment I ever had. Because, you know, before I knew about what the ABCs were in sobriety, I figured, like, once I have these things, everything's going to be all right. And it was the scariest moment. It was shortly before I got sober. Because I'm like, I couldn't understand why I wasn't happy. Why is everything still messed up? I have the things that I've been working for the last 10 years since I moved to Florida. I finally got them. And I'm not okay. And it was scary. And I went down hard. And thank God I went into treatment at that point. I went down to Miami into treatment. And I went twice in 6 months. I went in, I relapsed, I became group leader. I thought I was recovered because I was a group leader in treatment. But again, it was all about control. So as soon as I got there, I got to take the lead. I'm running the groups. I'm showing these. I'm doing what I got to do. I went over. I read the steps. I read them in like 15 minutes. I'm like, okay, yep. I left some manageable. I went through them. I'm like, okay, that's good. I did everything I had to do in treatment. I was hooking up with a couple of girls, but aside from that, I was doing everything I had to do in treatment. So I could get into these situations. Once I was sober, and I finally wasn't using anymore, and now I was able to do what I wanted to do. Like, the drinking wasn't in the way. And so for the first 6 months of my sobriety, after the second time, I went into an all-male halfway house. I got a job literally across the street. I was making, I think, $10 an hour doing medical collections. I joined the gym, which I had my bike. I joined the gym, which is a five-minute ride to the bike. And I had all my meetings. My girlfriend broke up with me after we relapsed. So I had no responsibilities other than the program. And thank God. Thank God. So now, the first 6 months, my life was completely perfect. I did the same thing every single day. I went to the same meeting. It was great. So I built the foundation of my program. And I think that's what kept me through some of the bad times over the last 21 years. Thank God I did that. But it was perfectly controlled. Every day, I bought the chicken, I had the George Foreman grill, I did a can of corn. I mean, it was the same thing every single day. I dropped weight, the gym, work, you know, for 6 months, perfect. And then I had to change that. Then life started to happen. Some of the gifts of sobriety started to come in, you know. And for the next 10 years, all I was trying to do was get my life back to the way it was for the first 6 months. And that's what I kept doing for the first 6 months. That's all I kept doing. Let me see. Let me check my notes. And I was struggling with that. And so I went back to school. I got back with my girlfriend. We got married. I had two kids. I had a job at the courthouse. I was working with a judge. I was feeling pretty good about that. The judge came to my wedding. We bought a house. I remember me and my wife were both in school at the same time. I would take the train down to Miami, and every day we'd leave at 7. We'd see each other at 11. We had our meals set up. We had our lunches set up. Weekends were good. I was going to meetings on Saturdays and Sundays in the morning, 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock at the Boca Pines. It was all set. I did that for 10 years. And so now, you know, I graduated my master's. I mean, life was perfect, right? Everything was great. And I get like 10, 11 years. And I look around and I go to, I was talking about this earlier. I go to the meetings and, you know, you're talking to him about what you guys did over the weekend. And you're asking him about, you went to his house and borrowed a chair. Robert was talking with Bobby. He let him borrow the kids' toys they didn't need anymore. And I'm like, I don't talk to anybody. There's nobody that I talk to that I hang out with over the weekend. So I was like, this isn't right. I got 11 years. I'm supposed to be like emotionally sober right now. Like, what happened? You know? And so through all the fear and the fear of the time lost for my using and trying to control my life, which I thought I was successful at because I was getting all these things. I was moving up the ranks in my career and success, but I still didn't feel okay. Now, in that time, at around 8-9 years, the few friends that we had in those first couple of years, little by little, we all started to move away, and people started to relapse. And then my two best friends, one of them relapsed, and our girls were really close. We used to talk about that in the halfway house, and it happened. He relapsed at like 8 years. And that scared the shit out of me. I mean, he was out of his mind. And then my other buddy, Ralph, he relapsed, and he was kind of in and out, and he got hooked up with this girl, and he ended up in like Venezuela or something, got thrown off a 9-story building. And these are the two friends that I had, and all we really did at that time was kind of call each other. I'm like, you been to a meeting this week? He's like, no, I went a couple weeks ago. I'm like, yeah, me too. All right, we're good. All right, we're both good. We kind of co-signed our shit, and our programs were not really there. There really wasn't much going on there. I had a sponsor that I'd call once in a while. I'd go down and see him for his anniversary in July. He's down in Miami, and I was kind of sliding through that way. But that scared me. And so just like the same one before, I was using all my control stuff, me controlling my life, and there was nothing to stop me from controlling now because I wasn't using it. So the control issues were, you know, hyperactive. And I might have had an opportunity to make some friends, maybe at work, maybe around the way, but, you know, when everybody has to do what I need them to do, I may not be the nicest guy. I may not be the most approachable because you need to do what I got to do or I'm judging you. You know? And it wasn't working. But in that 9th, 10th year, now I'm like, this guy's dying. This guy almost lost his wife. She kicked him out for a year. And I was scared of them, just like that time when I had the ABCs in the beginning. And I'm like, this is not right. What is the problem? My wife, she goes to school and she goes to a new school. She's a teacher. And she becomes, you know, she's going, I'm going to go out to lunch this weekend. I'm like, with who? She's like, they're the teachers. I'm like, which ones? And she's like, this lady, she's a little bit older, and this other little lady, and she's kind of a little nerd. And I'm like, you're going to go out with them? And that was kind of who I was. She said, yeah. She said, they're nice. I'm like, no problem. I'm watching my wife, like, make friends, like a normal person. And here I am, like, I'm too cool for that. I'm too cool for that. And I got no fucking friends. Excuse my language. I got no friends. I'm over here judging her. So then I had to talk to my wife and ask her, like, how do you make friends? She's like, they asked me to lunch. And I said, yes. And then I had to learn in recovery, and I was fighting. I had to learn. You guys taught me this, you know, as I started to try and reconnect. You guys taught me that I was, you know, early on I learned that this is the core of this disease of selfishness and self-centeredness. And it was so true because everything I did in my life, yeah, I was doing it for my family. I was doing it for my career. I was doing it for my kids. But it was all about me. The meetings that I went to had to work into my schedule so that I could do everything that I needed to do. You know? You had to be the perfect friend or the perfect person, you know, for me. And I didn't realize that I didn't know how to be a husband. I didn't know how to be a father. You know, the guys in my small group taught me. They're like, I bought a small boat. You know, I bought Dolphins tickets and my kids, like, I'm the only one standing. I'm like taking friends. I'm giving the tickets away because my whole family doesn't want to go to the game. And I'm like, my freaking kids, what's their problem, you know? And the guys that tell me, they're like, Serge, maybe your kids don't like football. Maybe they don't want to go on the boat. And I was like, who doesn't want to go on a boat? Who doesn't want to go to the game? And they said, well, you know, maybe you should try and find out what they like. Well, that means I gotta work a little bit. That means I gotta go upstairs and hang out with my son and play video games. But it's not that I didn't want to. I didn't know how. I didn't know that in order to keep a friend, you have to be a friend because that gets in the way of my schedule. And I don't have time for that. And I had to turn fear and control, you know, and you guys taught me this, into love and trust. You know, at around 12 years, my buddy Ernie, which I think many of you guys know, we had met years, like 2004. He was kind of one of those guys that I would talk to once in a while. We'd play fantasy football, but I'd see him once every couple of years. Those are my friends. Those are the only friends I had. The ones that were okay with just seeing every couple of years and didn't really ask me any questions because that was easy because it didn't get in my way. But Ernie would tell me about the retreat at the Duncan Center. And he's like, yeah, a lot of the guys that we play fantasy football with, I'm like, it's great. And he's telling me all about it. And he's all excited. And I'll tell you, that was the beginning for me. That was the beginning for me of starting to learn about emotional sobriety. For the first time, you guys started to teach me, you know, what I needed to know for emotional sobriety. Go through my notes here. Hold on. You know, as I started to come to the retreat and listen to you guys, my connection with God started improving. You know, I got a new sponsor. I was going to NA before, and I thought I wasn't fitting into AA. These guys, I went to the West. Funny thing is, I went to the West Side, and I went a couple times, and I turned to my friend Bobby, and I'm like, and Ernie, I'm like, man, this group is great. You know, and I think I went twice. And I was like, man, I wish they had a group like this up in Boca, you know? And he says, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah. He says, I've been looking for a meeting like this for the last, you know, 5-6 years. Group of guys, I've tried to connect, but really my meeting was just kind of going and taking off as soon as the meeting. No fellowship, no nothing, no accountability. If I didn't show up, nobody called. Nobody cared. And that was my fault. I thought it was their fault. Nobody gives a shit about me. Who did I call? Who did I give my number to? Who did I say hello to? Because I had to get out of there because I got a schedule to keep. And everything's got to be the right way. And I needed to find a meeting up in Boca because it was easy for me to, you know, get there. Quick, you know, time limit, all this craziness, you know. But that was kind of how it worked. So Bobby's like, why don't you just drive down to West Side every week, you idiot? He's like, you drive down for your dope for more than a half hour. It was a half, 30-minute ride. And I looked at him, I was like, you know what? It's a great idea. It's a great idea. I could do that. I could drive a half an hour, you know? And so, I mean, the retreats, and when I got to the West Side, I remember thinking, like, everybody was busting each other's balls, laughing. And, you know, again, I had known some of the guys, Robin, some of the guys were playing fantasy football, Larry and those guys, man, Steve, and I met them at the retreat. And we just busting each other's balls right from the get-go, right from like my family and friends from my neighborhood. And I was always trying to find that down here in Florida. And when I got to Westside, I was like, yeah, these are my guys. This is the group. I loved it. Fell in love with it. It was a great group. It was a great group. You know, what the Westside, what you guys have taught me, what working a program has taught me is that I don't need to find that perfect life that I had this first 6 months, or what I thought was the perfect life. You know, the perfect schedule for me to have balance. For me, the whole recovery thing is about finding balance in my life. And I either was out of control or in total control or thought I was in total control of people and everything else. And I wasn't. When it didn't go my way, it wasn't okay. And when it did go my way, I was the biggest asshole there was, especially to my wife, because she had to fit into the schedule. Nobody else did. You just say, thanks, see you later. My wife, she stuck by me with this. So she's probably got the biggest brunt of it. So I love her to death. I love her to death because she taught me what it was like to be a human, learn how to be a friend. She's like, you should go. They invited you. I'm like, yeah, but that guy's an asshole. She's like, what are you talking about? You were hanging out with him the other night. And I had to, like, break out of this self-sabotage kind of world, you know? But what happened the last 5 years, about 5-6 years ago, how much time? What time I got till? All right. Why do I ask that question? I mean, come on. Fucking walked right into that one. I'm almost done. So what I've learned, you know, I went to start a Monday night meeting, a closed meeting on Monday nights, like 6 years ago, seven years ago. And I went to these meetings, and I remember even going to the West Side and even going to the small group. I was talking about this earlier. I was still so scared to show up to the meetings. I would get anxiety before the groups because then I had to talk. And I had to get to know people. And there was a circle and a cigar circle. And now these guys kind of knew me a little bit. Right? And then I would push back. I just wouldn't show up. And then somebody called me, like, bro, where you at? You know? But I put myself in there a little bit. And then I kept trying to pull myself out, like I always did. And you guys didn't let me do that. You know, I made friends that didn't let me do that. And the small groups in the West Side, you guys taught me what balance is. And today, through my relationship with God, I know that I don't have control over anything. Just like this, you know, the notes that I can't stick to, or the notes that I took before I got here that completely changed by the time I got up here. You know, I don't have to control this thing. God came down and was with me the entire time. For me, the balance is knowing, you know, three things you can rely on always: death, taxes, and change. And life is always going to change. And if it's not, I'm going to be the same person I was when I was 6 months. And I don't want that. I want to continue to grow. But it's all dependent on the work I put in. And to me, balance, the recovery and balance is the key. Not that I have my feet planted like I did those first 6 months. Because that's going to change. That is definitely going to change. And I want it to change because I want to continue to grow. But that it's a balance like on a seesaw. That I know it's going to change. And I don't have those expectations anymore. And it doesn't have to go that way anymore. I'll put the work in and the results are up to God. And then I'm on that seesaw. And as it moves, like I know it's going to move, life's going to change, stuff's going to happen, stuff's not going to go my way, that I know and I have faith today that it's going to be okay. As long as I know, I got to shift and I got to move. And I got to stay connected to you guys. You know? And as long as I do that, I'm not going to fall. I don't have this illusion that everything's got to stay like this. Because it's not. It's not. And the people that I meet and the relationships that grow, you know, me and Robert really started getting, you know, close, and our family's getting close like 4 years ago. And for me, that was such a huge thing because I didn't have anybody that I talked to that way. And he helped me kind of enter into the group. And he would let me know, because I wasn't connected to anybody else, what was going on. And I felt like I was accountable, you know, and that's the best thing that happened in my life. You know, the gifts that this program has given me, I'm going to go to my notes, Stevie, okay? Because this is important. The biggest gifts I got into this program, as I've letting go and let go of control, and moving to accepting this program for the way it is, accepting life for the way it's going to happen, and accepting that God has got me, just like he did this weekend. And I'm telling you that as I was listening to people talk to me over the last 2 days, I'm like, shit, he's talking to me about what I'm thinking about what I'm going to speak about. I was telling you earlier. And then I sat in the cafeteria earlier today with, what's that gentleman's name? You, sir. What's your name again, sir?
Eddie.
And I'm sitting there and I'm eating and he's talking about exactly what I'm talking about. That the sobriety, somebody said, you know, I think I was talking to Miguel and Corey. They were saying, well, you know, it's great to see that people with so much time keep coming to these, you know, retreats and still, you know, engaging and want to get into sobriety. And what me and Ed were talking about is, yeah, that's great. But how we got here is because in sobriety, I hit a bottom and I was looking for more. I wasn't okay. And it's not like I just, you know, I was like, yeah, let me, you know, search for most of sobriety. I needed it because things weren't going well and I wasn't feeling good and I didn't want to feel like that anymore. And I was willing to put the work in. And so that's how people with time keep coming here, because I'll speak for myself, because I've been in some shit that I put myself in. And today, thank God, I don't have to be there. My relationship with God, my health, my family, my kids, my wife, every day I try and treat her better and try and do a living amends. My parents, I try and do a living amends. My father lives in the next development over from me. I live right here. My brother lives right there with my nieces. We all live like 2 seconds away from each other. What a gift. What a gift. When I was a kid, I grew up in a town, all Italians. My parents were in grandparents were in South America. We drive around and they'd be like, yeah, let's go to my grandma's. I'm like, where's your grandma? Like, she's like around the corner, and they go over there. So it was always a dream for me to have kids and have my parents close by. And those are some of the things that recovery has afforded me. And the biggest thing I think is that I'm learning to allow intimacy in my life with my wife, with my kids, going up and finding out who they are as people, because you guys taught me that, you know, getting off the couch, even though it doesn't benefit me because a friend needs something. It has no benefit, but it still amazes me. Like, it doesn't come natural to me to think of others. Like, I have to keep coming back here because you guys remind me that it's not about me. And I'll tell you what, when I let go and I let God, it's so much easier. I got to stop myself from jumping in the driver's seat. And this weekend, God took over, man. So I hope you guys got something out of it.
Amen.